Okay, we're turn to Hebrews chapter 12. We're going to finish, start in verse 25. I'm going to kind of go back a little bit to chapter or verse 18 of chapter 12. But there's some stuff going on in this passage that kind of the writer of Hebrews is weaving into this section history and the future. That's why I said my main idea is moving from fear to faith, our history and our destiny. It's because he and I'll try to prove this in a little bit, because he looks back to history, to Mount Sinai, and he looks forward to this unshakable future we have. And he's really speaking to the Jews of this time, but as we think through it, and we kind of think about historically, just in our own personal lives, how God has taken care of us, and think about our destiny, our future. And our future is not here. It's not dependent on this administration, this country. Our destiny is unshakable. And that's really kind of what the writer of Hebrews is going to look at. So what I want to do is kind of look back at verses 18 through 24. This is where the writer says, you know, in the old days they went to Mount Sinai, this very scary place. And I just want to read one verse where it says, it was so scary and so trembled was the sight of it that Moses said, I am full of fear and trembling. This was Moses who saw God, walked with him, heard him, saw all of the miracles, what God did in his life. And when he got to Mount Sinai, it's interesting that he would say, I am full of fear and trembling. That was their history. There was this sense of this, the separateness and the fearfulness of who God is. And he says later, the judge of all. There's this, and as believers, we understand from John 3:16, John 3:18, that our judgment has taken place through the cross, through his son. But there is this sense that we are dealing with the judge of all. This is, and it's serious. It is a, and the writer of Hebrews is trying to gather these people together and say, do not give up. You know, and when I read this morning about the church in Egypt, I mean, think of that. I mean, we walked in here today, I mean, you know, when I drive by Lake Point, I see all the cars, and I think, man, what'd I say? What, oh, well, the Coptic Christians are getting, like, nailed. I mean, they're killing them. They're raiding the churches. They're, like, this is a bad thing, you know, the whole. And I thought, this is what, I mean, what did you say? Did I say something funny? Oh, Coptic. No, Coptic. That's what these Christians were facing. It was like, I want to give up. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, no, let's think about your history. And he talked about Mount Zion, and he says, but that's not the mountain you came to. You have come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to myriads of angels, and to the general assembly of the church, the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkling of blood, which speaks better than the blood of Abel. You've not come to Mount Sinai. This is a new covenant. You've come to Mount Zion, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant. The issue of our sin is gone. Don't go back. Don't go back. And then, verses 25 through 29, he's going to kind of have them look not just past in their history of Israel. He wants them to look forward. Let me read verses 25 through 29. And there's some, he's weaving this stuff together, talking about this kind of the scary history and the fear and trembling that Moses had to now this unshakable promise that we have. Verse 25 of chapter 12. See to it that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For if those did not escape when they refused him who warned them from earth, much less shall we escape who turn away from him who warns from heaven. And his voice shook the earth then, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also heaven. And this expression, yet once more, denotes that the removing of those things which can be shaken as of created things, in order that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Don't go back. What he said, he wants them to think back about this Mount Sinai, where it said even if an animal touched this mountain, it would die. Moses walked away from there with fear and trembling, and he said, think about this. And I think when he says to them, if you turn away from him that warns from heaven, there's this whole sense he's saying, think how scary that was. If we miss, if people give up or miss what happened at the cross, if they walk away, if they don't listen to the voice from heaven that says, your sin is paid for at the cross. His blood is shed for the sins of the whole world. If they neglected it, look what happened to them. How much more trouble it will be if they neglect the gospel. And he says, and this is the expression, yet once more, there's this sense that we have this immovable, unshakable promise from God. And let me turn to Revelation chapter 21. If you can write it down, 21 verses 1 through 6. And this is what I think the writer of Hebrews is talking about. John says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth have passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw a holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down from heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them. And he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death, and there shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain, and the first things have passed away. And he who sits on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. And he said, write, for these words are faithful and true. There's the writer of Hebrews is saying, think back at Mount Sinai. Look ahead to the new heavens and the new earth that is unshakable, unchangeable, that God has promised to those who believe. So there's this destiny. He wants them. It's so easy to focus on this life and the struggles of this life. And what the writer of Hebrews is saying is, in the midst of this, looking back at our history and looking forward to our destiny, stop and think about his faithfulness and his goodness in the midst of trouble. Because that's what they were facing. He said, think about it. But we have received a kingdom, in verse 28, that cannot be shaken. Let us show gratitude. Who's got an NIV? What does yours say in verse 28? No. Oh, yeah, no. In Hebrews 12:28. Let us be thankful. Let us show gratitude. It's the same. It's the word for grace. It says, let us show grace. Let us understand the goodness and grace of God. That word grace and gratitude are kind of interchangeable, believe it or not. But that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying. Be grateful. Our destiny is unshakable, a kingdom that God will give us and is unchangeable. No matter what we do, doesn't depend on our faithfulness. It depends on the promise of God that one day and I heard a sermon the other day about heaven, and it was like, we think about us kind of floating around in the sky, don't we, a lot of times when we think about heaven. In Revelation, the reality is heaven comes down to earth. That's what we just read. God comes down to earth and dwells with us on a new heaven and a new earth. It's not something that we have to kind of conjure up. What is it? You know, I always wanted to be an astronaut, and I thought that would be cool to be in heaven and just float around in the planets. But our destiny is kind of something we will recognize. It'll be on this earth, well, new heaven and a new earth, but it'll be stuff we recognize. It says that this holy city comes down and God dwells with us. And it's real. So in light of that, when he reads this in verse 26, it said, yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. That's a quote out of Haggai. Let me turn there, because this is another. Where's Haggai? And he doesn't tell you who these quotes are. This is. Does anybody know who Haggai was? He's called a minor prophet. You know why they're called minor prophets? Yeah, small books. It's only two chapters, so he only wrote too little. But Haggai was a prophet that right after the Babylonian captivity and they came back to build the temple, he was the one that was the first prophet after the Babylonian captivity. Now, what's interesting is he's kind of saying to these Jews that are ready to give up, think back about after the captivity. Think of being in captivity for 40 years in a foreign country and now being allowed to come back and having that hope that when you come back, God is still going to work through you. And that's what Haggai is writing about. And verse 5 and 6. As the promise which I made you when you came out of Egypt, my spirit is abiding in your midst. Do not fear. For thus says the Lord of hosts, once more in a little while I'm going to shake the heavens and the earth and the sea also and the dry land. And I will shake all the nations, and they will come with wealth of all the nations, and I will fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts. So he's looking back. Chapter 18, he looks back at Moses and says, even Moses was filled with fear and trembling. The Jews that came back from the captivity were afraid. And the Haggai is saying, don't be afraid. I'm going to shake heaven and earth. The nations are going to come to bring riches to you. Don't give up. Don't give up. Even when it's hard, don't give up. And then at verse 28 where he says, and just show grace, show gratitude, be grateful. I think it's in Romans. I was looking up the verse this morning and I couldn't find it. When it goes through the whole list of, you know, bad sins, things that people do, and then at the very end it says, and they were not thankful. They were without gratitude. Out of all that, and what the writer of Hebrews is saying, think about where you've come from. Think about what God has done for us through his son. I was listening to Ravi Zacharias, and there was a question and answer thing, and I don't know how he answers some of these questions that he gets, but the whole thing was about, the question was about how can there be a good God in all this suffering in the world? And he said, the gist of it was, these are hard questions. He understands going through hard things in life is hard, but God is still in control. control. And he says, if you want it, when you really think about when you're going through difficult times, think of his son. Think about how the world treated him. Think what he went through. A perfect man, God himself, and what the world did to him. And that's kind of what the writer of Hebrews is saying. Think back. Think back how God took care of the nation of Israel after the captivity. And that's where the quote comes from out of Haggai. Verses 1 through 6 of chapter 13. And again, these are just kind of, what does this faith look like? How does God want us to now live? And he gives about five or six items in here. Let love of the brethren continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember the prisoners as though in prison with them, and those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves are in the body. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for fornicators and idolaters God will judge. Let your character be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So we confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What shall man do to me? There's this, and again, when you think of these five items, love of the brethren, show hospitality, remember prisoners, honor marriage, don't love money, be content. All those, you know, again, I was listening to Robbie Zacharias about loneliness, and one of the things about loneliness is we get kind of internal. We start thinking about ourselves a lot. There's this sense that every one of these, he's saying to the believers, think outside yourself. And show grace. That's what he said earlier. Show gratitude. Love the brethren. Show hospitality. And I know there's weird verses, you know, about, you ever, has anybody ever thought they've entertained angels? I haven't. I mean, some of the commentaries are saying that that's kind of referring back to Lot when the angels came down from, and they looked like men. And so there's all kind of weird. So I really don't know what that means other than, because I've never felt like I've entertained angels. But the idea is, be hospitable. Remember prisoners. I think Diane posted that this morning about Angel Tree, right? Is that this? Huh? Different. But there's this the Angel Tree thing where Chuck Colson started, where you start. How many times do you ever think about prisoners? Not very often. And what the writer of Hebrews is saying. Think about those guys. Like when we do Angel Tree, we do Angel Tree, right? Yeah. What do we do? The Christmas, which gives boxes to, that's something different, right? That's Franklin Graham. Sorry, I'm mixing it up. But there's this Angel Tree thing where it makes you think about the kids of these prisoners. And when I read that, I'm like, man, I hardly ever think about prisoners. And why do we think about them? It says, remember the prisoners as though in prison with them. And I think that's where Chuck Colson, I mean, he was a prisoner and got to see it firsthand. And those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves are in the body. I was just talking to Larry about the church in China. When how many people, they say there's a million a month becoming believers, and it's under communism, it's just exploding. Then you got the churches, and I mean, there's got to be Christians in Syria and in Egypt that are being persecuted, and the writer of Hebrews is saying, think about those people, because we're all one body. Think of going to church being afraid that the police are going to come in, walk in this door. I mean, I don't think the Royce City Police would ever come in here and shut us down. But it happens probably weekly in Egypt. And what the writer of Hebrews is saying, when it gets tough, think outside yourself. Think about the prisoners. Show hospitality. Honor marriage. I almost can't believe what has happened in the last 40 years with marriage and how it's kind of looked down at and not held up in high esteem. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, and it was happening in when you read about the Roman Empire. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, we think we got it. I think 14 out of, well, we think we have it rough. The Roman Empire was way worse than any administration we have. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled. Don't love money. Let your character be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. I'll tell you, when you go to a country, and Costa Rica is pretty nice, but we got it really nice. I mean, when you see what middle-class people live like, Diane was telling somebody, there's no hot water. You have no hot water. We get so, I mean, when you turn on the sink in the kitchen, there's only one spigot, and it's all cold. And if you go to take a shower, they have this electric thing that hangs above your head that heats the water as it comes through. It's really, and they talk about it, and we went to see Joshua's apartment. Joshua's closet. It's really a closet. And he's like all psyched up about this place. Let your character be free from the love of money. When I think about what we have, how much stuff I have, and the writer of Hebrews is saying, you got to think outside yourself. And I don't know how any of us can grow up in the United States and not battle a little bit with the idea of money and contentment. I was on the, where was I reading that magazine? It was on the plane. It was in the airport. And it was it must have been in Costa Rica because it was all about land in Costa. No, it was land in Phoenix, and I was looking through there, and there was not a house under $500,000. And I kept looking, you know, and I'm thinking, boy, that would be. How do you not think? I mean, maybe I'm just really weak, and all architects kind of want to have a big house, but the whole magazine was there to make me feel discontented. And when the writer of Hebrews is saying that, he says in verse 5, be content with what you have, for God himself said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. That's a quote, and I found this really interesting. That's a quote from Moses. Earlier, he just talked about it, Mount Sinai, where Moses was fearful and trembling. And then this quote where it says, I will never leave you or desert you. This was right before, it was after the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. Moses is standing at the Jordan River. And he's been told, and it seems really kind of unfair, doesn't it? That he can't go across the Jordan. Remember why? He hit the rock. He hit the rock twice. And when you read this story, the first time, there were two events like that. The first time he hit the rock, the water came out. The second time, it was almost like Moses wanted to prove this was from him and not from God. That when you read that story, and he hit it twice, and God said, Moses. And so he's not able to go into the across into the promised land. And listen to this story. This is why he's looking back at the nation of Israel's history. So at chapter 31 of Deuteronomy, I'm going to read 6 verses. So Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel. And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I am no longer able to come and go And the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross this Jordan. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua is the one who will cross ahead of you, just as the Lord has spoken. I mean, when you think earlier in that book, he was with fear. Moses was in front of the people, standing at the mountain, fearing and trembling. And now he's at the Jordan River, standing in front of the people. And I would guess that all of those people were thinking, this is going to be so great for Moses to take us across. Think of when we crossed the Red Sea with him. This is going to be so cool. And Moses stands before them, it's not going to be me. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. Verse 4, and the Lord will do to them just as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their lands, and when he destroyed them. And the Lord will deliver them up before you, and you shall do to them according to all the commandments which I have commanded you. And then this is the quote that we just read. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them. It's same guy. Giving advice now at 120 years old, standing in front of the Israel and saying, don't be afraid. Be courageous. Don't tremble at them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you nor forsake you. He's saying to these people, the writer is saying to his readers, don't give up. God will never, ever leave you or forsake you. I mean, that's almost too good to be true. Because there's times when I think, if I were God, I'd forsake me. Sometimes when I'm fearful and tired and want to give up. And think of standing on the Jordan and you're going to lose your leader, the guy that led you over the last 40 years. And he's saying, it's not going to be me. It's God that goes before you. I was talking to Diane the other night. I mean, I was supposed to leave for Florida tonight. And I was like, I just don't know if I can face it. Like, I didn't want to go. I mean, I just got back. And I'm like, then I got a phone call that said it was canceled, which was really, I was like, how cool is that? But I don't know about you. But there are just days when I'm just not sure I want to get up. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, remember what Moses said to those people. I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. I don't care what trouble you're feeling, how weak your faith seems, I am never walking away. And then the last thing he said, and so we confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What shall man do to me? Now, when he's saying this to these Hebrews, he's making them think back about this history. And he went back to Moses, and he went back to Haggai after the captivity. Now he goes back to Psalm 128. That's a quote out of, if you go, or 118. Let me go back there. It's Psalm 118. And it, at the top, it, this doesn't say this at the top of the psalm, but it, this was a psalm that was sung as people went in, like the Day of Atonement, to have their sins forgiven. Okay, I'll read the first six verses. So picture this. I mean, this is the nation of Israel again, it's at a gathering time, and he's making them think back. Everybody would remember these days. This was a parade. I mean, I'm not too much into parades, but think of our parades that we have up here in Christmas. Everybody's on the, you know, it's festive and stuff like that. Well, this is a parade of the nation going to Jerusalem to bring sacrifices for their sin. You know, I mean, that would be a weird parade today, wouldn't it? It's like everybody, eh, we're going to get our sins forgiven. And, so this is, let me just read the first six verses. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Oh, let Israel say, his loving kindness is everlasting. Oh, let the house of Aaron say, his loving kindness is everlasting. Oh, let those who fear the Lord say, his loving kindness is everlasting. Do we get the point? From my distress I called upon the Lord, and the Lord answered me and set me in a large place. And this is the one that the writer of Hebrews just quoted, verse 6. And the Lord is for me. I will not fear. What can man do to me? And in this passage, he moves the people from this fear of what is the future. I want to give up. We're getting persecuted, and I'm afraid. And he moves them to this point where he said, if the Lord is for me, I will not fear. What can man do to me? What am I afraid of? What can this world dish out? If God is on my side, why am I afraid? And think of the nation of Israel singing this song. His loving kindness is everlasting. You know, people talk about that there's the God of the Old Testament and of wrath and fear. Then you read Psalms like this. This is what they were talking about all the time. The nation of Israel would listen and understand, and that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying to them. Remember this. His loving kindness is everlasting. If God is for you, what can man do? Can my new teaching job get me? Can my fear of a client run? Am I going to have enough money when I retire? I'm like, I need to think different. You know, when he says, I will never leave you or forsake you, why should I ever, ever, ever be afraid? Let's pray together. Father, as we think through your word, what you have revealed to us through this simple book, thoughts and ideas that no man would come up with on his own. That the God of the universe that created this world, created us, would send his Son to restore our relationship with you. Father, as I face the next day, the next hour, the next year, Father, remind us daily of your grace and your goodness. Remind us what you have done for us. Remind us of the cross. Remind us that you will never leave me or desert me. What can man do to me? Father, thanks for your word. Thanks for your Son. Thanks for your grace and your mercy in our lives. It's in your Son's name I pray.